newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis where we talk about all sorts of things in the media, where we look at what's going on in journalism today with some Capital Region journalists looking at matters across the country. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now with the Upstate American, and I welcome our guests into the studio today, Judy Patrick, Miles Reed, and David Gustina. Judy Patrick, former editor of the Daily Gazette. What's particularly in your mind today,
you know,
Judy?
You know what's bugging me? So I was a longtime reporter, editor at a local daily newspaper. But what has annoyed me the last couple of days are these White House press briefings where the press secretary is inviting in these alternative voices, these reporters who ask the dumbest questions. I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and say, well, I had a lot better questions I could ask. But it seems like these kind of alternative press briefings are just so wrong. And I don't even know what kind of oxygen we should be giving them. So that's my beef. I just can't get over fact that, you know, how does the president look so good? What kind of diet is he following? Those are just lost opportunities to really hold the administration to account. And I just hate it.
We will come back to that. That's a great topic. Miles Reed, Judy's successor, editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. What's on your mind today in particular, Miles?
Well, it's a privilege to be here as always. What's on my mind is that as we're recording this, Rex, today WAMC is recognizing 25 years of the Roundtable. And this isn't just a shameless sort of, you know, shout out, because I'm a little bit of a fanboy of the show. Joe Donahue and Susan are just fabulous. But I just want to recognize it because I think it's such an important show for listeners who maybe don't know the origin when it came around. There wasn't anything like it. WGY did have some talk shows with Bob Cudmore, who was excellent, and Ellie Pankin. But WAMC sort of created a new show, and it was super valuable. It's an example of the kind of journalism and community media that is so vital for our discussion. So I just think, you know, it's a nice momentous occasion. And it's another reason for people to support public radio, public media.
Great topic. We'll come back to community media, the voices of the community being heard. What a great idea. David Gustina, our producer, the man who opens the studio to us every week. Thank you, David.
Yeah, and one little extra note. You are sitting in New York City, Rex, right now, and through the magic of radio and the cooperation we have from our friend Bill down in New York right now, you're able to talk to us this way. Of course, the issue that I would have brought up, Miles stole from me, public broadcasting. However, there's an incredible article this week I think we should at least dive into a little bit at some point, which is all about fear and how the fear from the Trump administration is creating a ripple effect in the media. And now this story about people who are fearing the administration asking editors to remove their names from old news articles. Talk about a discussion about minimize harm that we could have.
Boy, what a good topic, expecting editors to remove their names, which is something that Judy and I have talked about a lot, about our respective policies on that over the years as editors. These are all important topics, I think, that all kind of go back to what a changed environment we live in. And that is as a result of the first 100 days of the Trump administration, which everybody's been looking at in various media platforms. Donald Trump came into office asserting that he was going to be standing up for the First Amendment, and he's done anything but that. The government, under Donald Trump's direction, has asserted new control over the White House press access, you know, denying the Associated Press access to the Oval Office because it wouldn't use the words the president wants, taking over from the reporters themselves who actually gets to come into briefings, bring into briefings these new voices, let's call them that, that Judy mentioned. They've encouraged federal officials to investigate CBS and other entities, basically threatening to pull away broadcast licenses. They've attacked outlets right and left, intimidated law firms who might be representing media companies. Trump has signed executive orders targeting those firms. So we are in a significantly changed environment from where we were just a few months ago. And it is something that is causing the environment of fear, which you just spoke about, David. So what is this notion of asking editors to remove references to content that might be objectionable to the Trump administration? Judy, would you talk for just a second about what your standard has been as an editor when people would say to you, would you take my name out of your archives, out of the files? I don't want to have anybody getting access to that. What'd you do?
Right. The position changed over time. Initially, when we just had print archives, no, we're not going to change it. We're not going to physically go into our archive, our old library, and take the clip out. We're not going to scratch out your name. But as things became digitized and accessible to the whole world all the time, we started to listen to people who wanted their convictions, their arrests, even their weddings and engagements unpublished. And so typically we would say no. Then over time, I think a lot of editors have softened that position and said, well, if there's a real reason, perhaps we won't be. Oftentimes because we weren't following those arrests through to convictions or exonerations. Nowadays, this whole new reason, and it's a legitimate reason because people who are expressing their opinions, their First Amendment right, an opposition to an administration's policy on Gaza, for example, they could face real harm. And I can understand why you might be receptive to taking their name out of the digital universe, because it can have real negative consequences for people. We want them to be able to express their opinion. We do not want to have their identity be the reason why they get scooped up by ICE and taken away to another country. The reason we always wanted names in is it gives credibility to an article. But now I think we have to consider minimizing harm when people ask for it.
Minimizing harm, one of the four standards of the Code of Ethics of the Society of Professional Journalists. So, Miles, right now at the Gazette, it seems to me that there are conflicting values at stake because you don't want to alter what is really, as the saying goes, the first rough draft of history, right? You want to have your content be real, but to Judy's point, you don't want to damage people with your content sitting out there, right?
Yeah, it's a conundrum. And so this is something that has happened for a long time, you know, not just since Trump was elected for the second time that this has increased, but I would say over the last 8 to 10 years, people are now being much more aggressive to ask for things to be removed, whether it's a story about criminal charges or anything along those lines. But what is different and what is distressing is this element of the political retribution concerns. Shortly after the election, when Trump won, I actually got a call from, and I get calls about this all the time. I mean, almost every day, there's somebody wants something removed. But the one that really sticks out at me is in November, I got a call from a young woman in Fulton County, which is in our coverage area. And as part of our reporting, where we go out and talk to voters to say, who do you like? What are the issues? She had been critical of Donald Trump. And she said, at the time, I was fine with it, but I was a high schooler. And so that was the part of it that actually got my attention. She was concerned that she was potentially going to face some retaliation. So I tried to evaluate it in terms of, you know, what kind of media savvy does the individual have? We do have a responsibility to make sure that we don't quote somebody about something, even if it's a gotcha quote and you know it's going to be really good, if potentially we're taking advantage of somebody who maybe is not educated or is a minor and they don't have a parent, we will consider removing something. In this case, I decided to go ahead and remove it. She had a lawyer call me, and there were some concerns about a family retaliation included with Donald Trump and with the conservatives. But we do it very sparingly in general. Most of these requests, we reject them because a lot of times it's just somebody saying, you know, I had 6 DWIs and you wrote about it because the 7th one was a felony, but I have a business in Saratoga County and this is a real case I'm talking about. And it's really bad for me. It's like when I go to get hired for my, and it was a PR company. When I go to get a job or a contract, it looks bad for me. I'm like, you know what looks really bad is people who die in drunk driving accidents. So that one, even though this person has asked repeatedly, we don't remove something.
Do you say that to him, Miles?
No, I'm much more civil about it. But I think in this one, and I get hundreds of these requests, I remember this person by name. I think I did say, I looked up your record and you have multiple charges. I said, maybe if it was one case and it was a mistake, maybe, but even in that case, we probably wouldn't remove it. But a chronic pattern, I said, you know, that's not what we do.
I don't see why you need to be so civil, Miles. It seems like some of the fun of the job ought to be saying, are you kidding me?
That says more about you, Rex, than anything.
I know. It's easy for a retiree to say that, right?
That's right.
So, David, you're the guy who brought up this topic of the ripple effect. And do you feel as though in the journalism that WAMC does or that we're all doing, are people actually shying away then from talking about controversial issues, from putting themselves out there?
I think we're starting to see that. You know, mm-hmm. you look at the colleges and the universities and the pressure they're under right now, and people don't want to go too far. I have to say, even at WAMC, because public broadcasting is now under the microscope, we're concerned about how we talk about these issues. We don't want to, you know, get the wrath. But at the same time, we got to do our journalism. Now, here's the thing that really got me about this article, guys. The fear is the one thing, and the removal is this possible thing you can do. But even when you remove it, it's probably not gone. As pointed out in this article, it's still on the web somewhere. And when you have government agencies who really want to find out something, and they can use their experts to do it, even when you remove it, it's still there in some form.
Right. It isn't as though something that once removed is not still available for those who can digitally search effectively. You know, it is especially problematic, I think, for people who are in a vulnerable position, say, for example, student journalists. Now, the reason that I'm sitting in New York City in the Digital Island Studios, that's the name of the place where I'm sitting, the reason that I'm here is because it is alumni weekend at the Journalism School at Columbia University, where I'm the alumni board chair. And Columbia, of course, made headlines earlier this year, the Journalism School did, when the New York Times reported that the Journalism School had advised its international students to avoid publishing work on sensitive topics like Gaza or Ukraine. Dr. Jelani Cobb, who's the dean of the Journalism School, a distinguished academician, a great journalist, wrote in a social media post that he was trying, in his words, not to dissuade students, but to give them an honest rendering of the risks that it entailed. So you think about these young journalists, many of them international students, who could easily have their visas pulled for really no apparent reason.
And you already can
understand. Have. Yes, and they have. And so if you're a young student journalist, I would think that A, you're going to curtail your reporting to protect yourself from being deported, or B, choose to go somewhere else for education other than the United States of America. The implications are profound.
It's the great chilling effect. It started with Judy mentioning why certain people are getting into the White House at the briefings, because they're going to say nice things and ask nice questions of the administration. This is all designed to pull everyone in line. This is the message. Say something good about the president or you're against him. If you're not for him, you're against him. That's the line. And this is having a ripple effect in almost every institution in our country right now.
And the chilling effect is real, because what you are not seeing this spring as the weather gets warm are any protests on college campuses about our treatment of what's happening in Gaza. I mean, that is real. And I know that Jelani Cobb has gotten some pushback on the idea that even though he didn't mean it as a way of suppressing the free expression of opinion, and it essentially did that, I think that it was a service to young people who thought that they were in the United States of America where they could express their opinions freely and openly without worrying about getting snatched off the street. So there was that service, but it's a true test of us as journalists going forward.
Know,
and it's easy for me to say that sitting up here in New York studio.
Right. It isn't unprecedented in American history. Last night, I went to see Good Night and Good Luck on Broadway. And a couple of hours later, it was announced that George Clooney had gotten a Tony nomination for his performance as Edward R. Murrow. And at that time, in the 1950s, there was a significant chilling effect as the Red Scare, as it was called. The difference at this point, in part, is that the scare is coming from the White House. It's coming from a unified federal government under the influence of a president who is determined to change the way news is reported. Now, to the point that you brought up, Judy, about these alternative voices, as the White House press secretary refers to them, the newcomers in the White House press corps, talk about that a little bit. These people are, let's say, not following typical journalism standards, right?
Right. They're described as influencers or people who have podcasts or Instagram channels or TikTok accounts, and they are widely followed. And we have been perceived as old fogies who don't appreciate the new media and how news is getting disseminated. pish posh on that. They're not journalists.
This pish is posh, Judy.
Pish posh. new media is not media. I think they ask inane questions. You know, the one question that I thought was good that's getting beat up on is, what else should we be covering? As a reporter, I used to ask that at the end of every interview. I said, what other questions should I have asked that I did not ask? I think that's a fairly good question. But these were sycophants, I think, that they were just trying to gain favor with the administration. They were not true. These are not true journalists. These are not true journalism organizations. And this is a diversion. We should pay a little bit of attention to it now and then just discard it for the waste of time that it is.
For the record, the reporter in question that we're talking about here was named Cambry Nelson. She works for something called the American First Policy Institute. So she bashed the legacy media for, as she reported it, not reporting anything on President Trump. I think your question is good, Judy. You know, what else should I ask that I haven't? Her question was, what direction do you advise me to go into? She said to the White House press secretary. You know, it was...
A joke?
You would think it would be. And then, of course, Carolyn Leavitt replied, the White House press secretary, well, I wish there were people in the legacy media who were like you. I'll bet she does.
Well, come on, guys. Trump said, and this is from one of our articles, that the multiple major news outlets are illegal. He called CNN and MSNBC political arms of the Democratic Party, predicting they would be turned off. He is coming straight for the journalism of verification, straight for the mainstream media. He wants his influencers, his friendly folks, to report on him, and everything else is bad. And to your point, Rex, students of history, we need to be students of history as journalists. This is not unprecedented. There have been authoritarians around this world for a long, long time, and we can follow their tactics pretty closely and pretty clearly. This is exactly the path that this presidential administration is on, and I think we should keep reporting that.
Yeah, I'm incredibly concerned about this, and you brought up the idea about Trump saying that the media is just an arm of the Democratic Party. And this is a point that I've made on this show a number of times. But I think here we are in Albany, New York. If you look back at the last 30, 40, 50 years in terms of how the mainstream media in this area has covered politics in New York State, far more stories have been about corruption and fraud perpetrated by Democrats. You know, the names over the years, we had a chief justice in New York State who was brought down in the 90s. Because of wrongdoing.
We had a controller.
We had
Hevesy.
A controller. We've had, and there was
governors.
A point about 10 Democrats in the legislature about 15 years ago, one after another, including Shelley Silver, repeatedly. My point is that we need to look at this factually. This idea that the media is just a tool is just wrong. It's just, it is not accurate.
You know, it is striking to think about what's going on right now in the context, for example, of CBS News, which, by the way, of course, was the home of Edward R. Murrow and Fred Friendly, who were under the siege of Joe McCarthy in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And CBS News, their home, is now under siege with the FCC standing in the way of its merger with Paramount, which it must approve, by virtue of a lawsuit that the president filed against CBS News. And the result of this was, within the past couple of weeks, the executive producer of 60 Minutes, the landmark program, the top-rated news program in America, the executive producer has left the show, saying that he no longer has the editorial independence that he thinks that requires. It's a tragic moment. It shows how far this is going when the administration's effort to block the business prospects of the owner of CBS is having an effect on the person who oversees the journalism at CBS.
And it's only been 100 days. Keep that in mind. What else is going to happen to us? My only hope is that there are other elements, other media out there that are still holding the line. And I'm hopeful that local journalism can hold the line, too, because there's just too many of us for them to put their fat finger on us and squash us. There are too many individual voices out there that can speak up and speak their mind. But, I mean, I grew up with CBS News and high regard for CBS News. We just have to watch carefully to see who will succeed Bill Owens. In one respect, I wish he had stayed and fought the fight, mm-hmm. Because his departure is essentially a one-day story, and we're going to forget this.
Significantly, Scott Pelley, one of the anchors at CBS, took to the air right after this and actually accurately reported what was going on. Mm-hmm. He referred to Bill Owens, the executive producer, as tough. But our parent company, Paramount, he said on the air, is trying to complete a merger. The Trump administration must approve it. He said none of our stories have been blocked, but Bill felt he had lost the independence that honest journalism requires. And it is quite remarkable, I think, that the journalists of CBS News aired that story, notwithstanding the pressure that brought their boss down. Remarkable.
We're going to have a lot more courage when it comes to the media going forward, I think. Don't you, Rex?
I think that's true. I think that the difficulty is, of course, when you have corporate entities who have to respond to their shareholders' interests, who are driving profit, who see that, for the case of Paramount, Paramount's profits are going to be deeply affected if they can't complete the merger that they're aiming toward. And so I think that's why Paramount is in negotiations with the president to try to settle this lawsuit. And that is the peril of privately held media, which kind of brings us to the issue that Miles Reed said he wanted to talk about here, which is 25 years of the Roundtable and the importance of community-based media, in fact, not-for-profit media, which is what public broadcasting is, of course, and which is what so many new entities are now finding might be the course forward, nonprofit media that doesn't have to account for shareholder interests in making their journalistic decisions.
It's going to be a lot harder if they pull the money away, though, from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which we learned this week has sued the Trump administration over some attempted firings, including an appointee that had been appointed originally by President Trump. So this is a multi-pronged approach, guys, where, you know, we're worried about the obvious conflicts when it comes to for-profit media and ownership. But now he's coming after, as well, public media. So we're really seeing what could end up being not only a chilling effect, but the loss of community across this country. That's what the roundtable provided. And I want to throw in DEI for a minute, because I feel like as journalists, we're not questioning officials who call this sort of woke ideology. What do you mean woke ideology? Diversity, which is what we try to provide in our programming at WAMC. Equity, which is, I think, one of the basic values of our Constitution. We're all born equal. And inclusiveness, being inclusive. And I don't understand why that sort of gets a pass and we're not pushing that harder.
Hey, when it comes to nonprofits, I also worry that the Trump administration will come after nonprofit organizations concerning the status of their nonprofit status and try to take that away. And I also worry about reporter or publishers and editors who have to spend a lot of time trying to raise money to keep those nonprofits going. I mean, that is a real issue.
That's right. It is a difficult task for these entities. Right now, a lot of nonprofit newsrooms. I'm on the board of Adirondack Explorer, which is a wonderful nonprofit newsroom. New York Focus, which does investigative reporting for the state of New York. Those entities get funding from individuals and from foundations. And you worry what happens when the foundations look at all the other places where they may be putting money. State humanities councils have lost their funding. Historical societies, museums, arts organizations, right and left, the government is taking money away from nonprofits. And you wonder, how long will journalism be able to enjoy some of those donations if that's what they're depending upon for survival?
It's really time for the average person to stand up and support the local media, the national media that they care about. I mean, every person has the power as a group. If we all work together and recognize the fact that real journalism isn't free and they need to do their part. You hear this on your fund drive all the time, but I'm saying this applies to your local newspaper, your regional newspaper, your local television stations. You just need to recognize it. We need a new awareness from our public.
The problem is that fear defeats unity. Because when people are afraid, they run to their corners, they hide behind things, they want their names removed from articles. So when you make people afraid, it's very hard to call them all together. We're lucky at WAMC because we've developed a loyal audience for a long, long time now, decades. And they're there for us, and we're hoping they will be this time around. But fear is the great chiller of us all.
If you look at public media, if you look at what has happened to WAMC, to our local public television station, WMHT, WGBY over in the Berkshires, it has done such great work over the years thanks to donations, but also thanks to a little bit of federal money. $1.30 a year is what taxpayers are putting in for all the public broadcasting in the country. And that's what is going away. And we need to step in, all of us, to do our part to stand up for independent reporting. So that's our look back at the first 100 days.
Well done, Rex.
Depressing view of things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Next time, we want to go to New York with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So
hey,
that's
goodbye
all.
And good luck.
Goodbye.
I mean, good night.
All right. Well, thank you all for being a part of this. David Gustina, Miles Reed, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. With gratitude to Bill Segman at Digital Island Studios, to David, our producer, and especially thanks to you folks for joining us this week. We hope to see you again next week on The Media Project.
She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspapermen meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's aunt. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and editor and Vice President of the Daily Gazette, Miles Reed. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the bill. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.